Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Breakthrough Directions. Each week, Breakthrough Directions explores the two faces of your business, outward through marketing and client delivery, and inward, your vision, profit model, systems, team, and you, so you can grow a business you love and live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm Linda Feinholz, your host for the show, calling in as I do each week on Tuesdays at 9 Pacific, noon Eastern, from sunny Los Angeles. I'm the founder of the Breakthrough Academy at breakthroughbydesign.com, and my co-host Gina Gaudio-Graves will be joining us shortly. We have a really intriguing show for you this week. I expect that it's both going to stir you intellectually as well as emotionally, because we're really going to dive deep on an issue that is not discussed very often in business. It's kind of what's hiding behind the curtains of business. And I selected this week's topic because as I'm speaking to you, I'm actually standing in a home, my home, as I'm going through the process of restaging it in order to put it on the market. And as I was standing here this past week, I was thinking to myself, you know, the challenges that get stirred up in business resemble those that come up in the rest of life. So, for instance, I've made a decision that I'm going to sell my house. There's the starting point. However, interestingly enough, what it takes to sell a market nowadays to get your buyers in the house, it requires a whole new kind of marketing than it did when I bought this house 9 years ago. So this whole notion of how do you get traffic to come in and view your house, new stories nowadays. Part of that is how a house is marketed by real estate brokers and so on, and part of it is how your property is staged and then how the house itself is staged. And it's not that staging a house is new, but rather the experience as a homeowner of what it means to sit back, to detach from owning this fabulous home and amazing house, and think about it in the context of a little bit more independence in my thinking, separating a bit of my feelings about the house, this space, and the objects in it, that very much resembles what one has to do when you're making, when you're setting the new vision and goals for your business. Now, there can be all kinds of reasons for setting a new vision. It can be because you've actually achieved the one you had set before, and the same thing with resetting goals. Sometimes we're resetting them because despite trying and trying and trying and pushing that giant rock uphill like King Sisyphus is doing down in Hades, all the effort in the world doesn't seem to be getting us traction towards that vision, towards those goals. So there can be many reasons that make us pause and say, in business, in life, is there a reason to, in fact, reset? Part of what we're going to do today is talk about what's this notion behind restaging our business. What is it that it actually takes in order to step back, gain some independence, and look at what is it that's needed in order to get the right potential buyer to walk into your business the same way I'm looking to get that potential buyer to walk into my home. So, a couple of different ideas that we're going to be looking at today. One of them is one that I teach all of my clients and students in the Breakthrough Academy. And it's this key that I call getting business matter of fact. The emotions are always there in business. We can't operate daily without them. Isn't that right? But the fact is that those emotions shouldn't be the basis of your decisions. Here's another aspect. Your identities are there, who you thought or intended to be, who you've been in the past. Yet again, they shouldn't be the basis of your decisions. And here's another aspect to it, is that your goals should be the starting point and thus the anchor point for all your decisions. So let me give you some examples from this house that I'm standing in. The emotions are clearly here. This is a fabulous house that I'm standing in. And what I've had to do is step back and say, I know on the one hand, wherever I live next is going to be equally fabulous. Every place I've chosen to live has been fabulous. And whoever buys this house is going to have their awesome experience living in this space as well. My old identities are here. Who I was when I said that I bought this house, what I intended to do with this house as a space of entertainment and business and so on. And yet, the same thing will hold in the next space that I'm living in, that I'm making my home. So let's talk about identities for a moment, because I happen to have an object that I'll share with you in a moment what it is that's sitting next to me. You'll probably get a really good laugh about this. But part of what staging this house has required is that I go into every drawer and every cupboard and look at every surface I have an object on and say, how do I keep decluttering this space so that the next person who walks in here can project themselves into this space? Same thing holds for one of your clients, doesn't it? That when they hear what it is you're offering, they can project themselves in to being a user, a consumer, a buyer of your service, of your products, and so on. So as I'm going through cupboards, I've had to look at the stacks of books I've invested in over the years and say, haven't really opened it or referred to it in 9 years in this house. Do I wish to take it with and be a continuous library where I'm paying to, quote, store books? If not, which ones am I ready to let go of? I'll just start with books because I happen to have shelves and shelves and shelves of books. Well, as a result, my local library has been the recipient of 26 bags, and I mean chock full, edge to edge and filled up to the brim, of books. And I'm not done yet. But I'm sitting
with
one.
This is such an interesting conversation. I've been here for a while just listening.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
In 2005, when I went through my miraculous transformation, and Bill and I made the decision to stay on the road living in our RV, we decided that we would hire packers to pack everything we owned up, put it into storage, so that we could stay on the road. And 2 years later, after paying somewhere between $1,500 and $2,000 a month on the storage unit and the insurance for the stuff in storage,
exactly,
I made the decision to find a way to get rid of everything so that we wouldn't have to keep paying to store stuff we didn't even remember we owned.
Exactly.
And decided at the time that one of our good friends, another marketer, Liz Tomey, was in the process of buying a second house. She was complaining about not the price of the house, but the price of everything it was going to take to furnish a house that had 5 bedrooms and 3 bathrooms. And so we gifted her everything we owned. And for the price of having it shipped from Chicago to Tennessee, she literally got everything. 3 bedrooms, an office, 2 bathrooms, kitchen, eat-in kitchen, living room, full dining room, 2 family rooms, you name it. And while that meant that she got my antique book collection, I had about 1,800 feet of shelf space, most of the books printed between the years of 1700 and 1910. It also meant that she got my china, service for 20 people, my crystal, service for 20 people, my gold flatware, service for 20 people. And she also got things like my underwear and my shoes and everything else that was there, right? It was
Tina, basically you delegated to her the job of sorting what she wanted to keep and was or wasn't attached to.
Precisely, Linda. And
so here's the classic.
I got to tell you, what it did for my mindset, for my business, was even bigger than what it did for the clutter.
Exactly.
It was huge.
Exactly. Exactly. And this mindset side of it is so important, because there are times where I'll just use this recent couple of weeks where I walk in and I look at a set of books, Ogilvy on advertising, et cetera, that I went and I found. And, you know, I've got this set of books. There's only 10 of them. And I've had to look at them and say, and since the day you bought them, have you cracked the cover? And realistically, in the next year, are you going to crack the cover on it? And if not, how about gifting it with someone who right now is looking for that book and is going to use it right now? It doesn't mean every single book that I'm looking at I'm ready to release. And here's the perfect example. So, Gina, in front of me I have a book that virtually everyone who graduates from high school in the United States of America has as a possession. It's called a yearbook. And I have a yearbook that happens to be sitting here. Guess where it's been for many, many years? At my mother's house. But I had cousins coming over, and I was at my mother's house, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to take it off the shelf and bring it because there's something I want to show my cousin David. I flip open the cover. I show the picture to David. We have a good chuckle about it. The book's still sitting at my house. Now, okay, I'm going to be leaving this house, and I am having a tug of war. Do I take it back to my mother's, or do I just let it go? Because the truth is that was the first time since graduating high school that I opened the cover on the book.
You want to know what we did? Because Bill was extremely attached to all of his yearbooks from high school and college. Yeah. Simply because he was not only in them as a student, but he was also on yearbooks, so he played a role in creating them. Want to know what we did with all of Bill's yearbooks? We
digitized
them
back
to PDFs.
Oh,
no,
perfect.
We digitized them to PDFs so that the signatures he got on it, all of it is still there. He can look at it anytime he wants, but it's on an external 1 terabyte hard drive instead of this big stack of clunky books we had to carry everywhere.
Perfect. And here's the key. I love that you brought Bill's example into this because you were describing the parts of his identity that were attached to that particular set of objects called yearbooks. And in our life and in our business, we have all these identities that we're not necessarily conscious that we're really holding as if they're anchor points to who we are in the world. That mindset, in a sense, it's like having clogged pipes in your mindset.
And look at it.
I know. And if what we want to do is step forward towards new goals, fresh goals, it's almost as though what we have to do is gently scour out the pipes and create clear pipes and say, now, what's the mindset? What are the beliefs that someone who is going to create the following business as when they wake up every morning, as they're operating during the day, as they're making decisions, and so on. Who's that person right here this year now? And step into that new identity.
And, you know, that really means that the first step is doing something that I see so many entrepreneurs never having done, and that's figuring out what the goals are in the first place.
Exactly.
What does life look like in the future? 1 to 3 years from now, 3 to 5 years from now, the more detail you can put into that picture, the easier it will be to step into that role. But at best, most people think about, I want to make $1 million a year. That's at best. Mm-hmm. And if that's all you've thought through, it's really hard to step into that, isn't it?
It's impossible, isn't it, when you get out of bed in the morning to just say, well, I'm making $1 million a year day. It actually gives no guidance whatsoever for how you spend your time, who you spend your time with, what it is that you're using as the focus of your attention, your resources, and so on. I think you and I see this over and over and over again when we're starting off with new students and new clients, is that they can name one goal but not paint the picture.
Right.
And for lack of painting the picture, in fact, it doesn't matter how many people I hear say, I want to make $1 million. It's an abstract idea. There's actually nothing concrete about it. I teach people to use SMART goals, and I know there's all kinds of thinking about the best approach to take with setting goals, but I teach people SMART goals because it makes them pause and think about 5 elements of a goal. Is it specific? Is it measurable? Is it achievable? Is it realistic? Is it timed? If I can get you into that kind of conversation, it stops being abstract and becomes more concrete, doesn't it?
It does.
And that's not the only place, because you and I both make people get very, very specific with the why. Why is that your goal? To climb down underneath it, because if you're not motivated when you get out of bed in the morning, it doesn't matter how smart the goal is. You're not going to actually use all your time and intelligence and energy towards it, are you?
Nope.
So you and I, as we were thinking about this topic for today, really said, you know, there's sort of five symptoms, five characteristic signals when it's time to restage a business. And I would love to spend the rest of our time together, as well as our mystery guest who we're going to have joining us, talking about what are those signals that, if we'll pay attention to them, really indicate, in a business matter-of-fact sense, that it's time, let's just say, starting with number, that first element, which is you've got to have goals, but now what are the signals and the symbols that pop up around you? What are the statistics, if you're measuring what's going on with your goals, that really say, you know what, time to hit the pause button, time to do a reset. So what would you like us to start with, Gina's number one?
Number one. So do you have enough traffic, enough of an audience to actually meet the goals that you have? I see people so often who say, I want to make $1 million a year, who get like three people to a website, but get one or two people into their store each day. If you don't have enough traffic to actually meet your goal, how in the heck do you plan on getting that? And
exactly.
That actually takes doing some work to figure out, first, what's the goal? Second, how many people do you need to have to reach that goal? And third, what needs to happen in order to bring in that number of people so that you can reach the goal?
Exactly. And as you're listening to Gina and I discuss this, keep thinking about this in the context of your business. So, for instance, this past year I worked with an attorney, and she could describe what her economic goals were for her law practice, and she was then able to step into, so when we talk about it from traffic, how many appointments did she have in order to, quote, close the sale, in order to have people sign up with her as her client? And she knew from experience that that meant every month she had to have 22 appointments with new customers. So she had that measurable statistic on which to base all of her networking, all of her marketing, all of her conversations. She could look every day of the week, every week of the month, and say, how close am I to accomplishing that goal? Am I getting the, quote, traffic I need in order to hit the economic goal I have for my business?
Well, and look at how different the feeling is when you know those numbers. Now it's not about, I got to go do more, I got to go work more, I got to go talk to more people. Now it becomes, I only need 20 people a month. It makes it so much more actionable and so much less overwhelming, so that you can get out of procrastination and into action, doesn't it?
It so does. And this is one of the key elements. You and I have run into this when we ask people to set goals, to describe what they want, and in a sense they become stymied with even describing it. And one of the reasons I keep pushing and pushing and pushing and say, no, we don't move into action until we've described those goals, because if we're talking about I want to make $1 million and that's an abstract idea, all it does is trigger stress. You don't
Yep.
know how to move forward from there. You don't know what action to take from there. Yet, if what she's trying to do is make sure her calendar has 22 appointments on it, all that stress comes down and relaxes. What actions is she taking on Monday? By Friday, she can look back and see Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, how did it work? Following week, do I do more of the same or do I make adjustments? Becomes very specific. And very, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know, human real is the word that's coming to mind right now.
It does. Really, really does.
Yeah. And the same thing in an online business. If what you are doing is building joint venture relationships, those joint venture relationships in order to bring complementary traffic from your joint venture partner or your strategic allies community to your site, to your programs, it's the same thing. You need to have the goals so that you're designing your programs, your steps, your actions, and can keep tracking. Are those actions getting the result?
And keep in mind that especially when it comes to joint ventures and strategic alliances, they apply just as much to offline businesses as they do to online businesses. So many entrepreneurs and small business owners hear the term joint venture, and they think that's the kind of thing that a Microsoft or a Nike or a company that size should be doing. They don't think that applies to them as well. And yet, I see it very differently. As we've talked about with Mark Harris on the show a few times in the last couple of months, joint ventures are even more important to the small business owner than to the large, big corporation, because it's that thing that gets you maximum leverage, that lets you work the least, get the smallest amount of effort put into it with the biggest possible result. Joint ventures really are the key to making all your goals happen. But you got to figure out the goals first. You got to know what the numbers look like before you can really use joint ventures to get maximum leverage.
You know, so often when I'm helping people set their goals, their feedback is, well, this feels really analytical and very left brain. And here's the irony is goals are not divorced from emotion, devoid from the feelings of what it is, the reasons, the underlying reasons. You know, perfect example is Greg Rainerson of Cops and Donuts, who we had on the show earlier this year. He and his fellow cops saw that the local bakery that had been in business over 100 years was being shut down. And they made a decision collectively to invest in and buy that bakery and turn it around as a business. Now, they've had tremendous success, but one of the gems that he shared with us was that they made a decision that they wanted to affect their local community, not just the donut shop or the buyers of donuts. And so they have done everything in their business to make sure that their product sourcing for the extension of the T-shirts and the cups and the mugs, the, you know, all the other paraphernalia that's been shaped in there and now being offered by their expanded business is in fact being produced, if at all possible, within a 100-mile radius. And that's absolutely both a business decision but also an emotion-based decision, a value-based decision that's in the business. It's in there as part of the goals.
It very much is. It's a great example.
Yeah. So here's another signal for when it's time to start looking at restaging your business, and that would be in an online world, if you're not converting at least 2% of your visitors into customers, then it's really time to assess and reassess what's going on. In an offline business, well, we talked about the attorney who she knows that because she's done it enough times that for every month when she has 22 prospective clients sitting across the desk from her, 16 of them sign. And that ratio, in fact, meets her goals for this particular year. Now, next year she has new goals, and there's elements of the business that are being redesigned so that she can convert more and have her business, this law firm, handle even more clients. But she knows her ratio. And so, Gina, share a little bit more about this online conversion issue.
Well, you know, every business is different. Every website is different. But typically, you need to know what those metrics are. And it's not just what are you getting now, it's what should you be getting, right?
Exactly.
With the right system, you really can convert close to 10 to 12% of your visitors into customers. I know that the norm online is more like 1 to 2%. So if you're not getting 10 to 12%, there probably is a better way of doing it that could really let you make a lot more money, reach a lot more people with a heck of a lot less effort. Traffic is expensive, whether it's online or offline. That's the single biggest expense in a business. And you want to be able to maximize the return on the investment of traffic so that you're really getting the biggest possible results from that investment. So typically 10 to 12% is possible from a website visitor to a customer. But the bigger, most important part is not just what your traffic conversions look like. And that's usually where online business owners stop looking. Okay, I'm getting a 3% conversion. That's great. And then they stop. You also want to look at what's happening once someone becomes a customer. If all you're doing over and over again is driving traffic, selling somebody something one time, then going out and driving more traffic to sell somebody else the same thing one time, you are leaving so much money on the table, it's not even funny. You want to have at least two things to sell. One thing you're selling to generate the lead, a new customer, and something else that you're selling to that same customer that really is where the profit comes from. As long as you can cover the costs of generating that lead from the first sale, you're doing really, really good. So you also want to be thinking through what percentage of your customers buy a second time. When I'm doing consulting with businesses that already exist, it's rare, I mean really, really rare, for more than 3 to 5% of their customers to ever buy again. Even in companies that are doing 7 and 8 figures, 3 to 5% of their customers buy a second or more time. Well, it's really possible to be getting more like 20 to 30% of your customers to buy a second, a third, a fourth, a fifth time. So why settle for only 3 to 5% of your customers buying something else later on? Why not look at how to tweak the business so that on purpose you're really getting customers who become long-term customers who buy over and over again?
And in fact, if we go back to the cops and donuts conversation, for those of you who may not have heard it the first time, if you go to the October 15th, 2013 show, you can listen to the full interview that we did with him, with Greg Rainerson there. They do a tremendous amount of marketing to get people who are driving down the freeway to get off, come into their relatively small town, to come into the restaurant, to come into the donut shop, to come into the gift store. But here's the thing. They have figured out if they've got you in the door to buy the donut and you turn to the right, you're going to see something else that you think, this is too cute, too hilarious, too clever to not also buy. And, oh, by the way, I need three of those T-shirts because I know they're perfect for Gina's husband, Bill, or anyone else. And, oh, by the way, they also have online so that once you've driven away from their store and you think, gosh, we should have gotten that mug, great, come on online.
And, you know, that's such a great example for anyone to see, because going into a donut business, a bakery business, you would think that their ideal customer, their target market, if you will, is the people that live in little old Clare, Michigan, a town of maybe 1,000 people. But that is oh so not who they target, is it, Linda?
Not at all. They're targeting the tens of thousands of people per day and per week who are driving past Clare, the vacationers who are passing through Clare who didn't used to stop, who now have a reason to stop. And, oh, by the way, they're speaking around the world at police conventions and they're speaking there. So now they actually have an international audience that knows about them and is now having an excuse for if they're in that part of America to get off the freeway and come visit in person. But even without that, come become an online customer.
And
how many ways?
On the show, he actually talked about the impact that tourism has had in the community. Remember earlier, Linda said that one of the things that these guys really wanted was to make a positive impact on the community, not just sell donuts. So they actually saved the little local hotel because they're bringing people in from around the world who are attracted to going to see the donut shop and the uniqueness of the marketing in the donut shop. So they're now coming into Clare on vacation on purpose and experience everything else that Clare, Michigan has to offer. It's brilliant.
It is brilliant, and it's a beautiful part of the country. And so people who might have sort of kind of have thought one day we ought to go through Michigan, it now becomes the hook that has them saying, we're absolutely going to make our next vacation going to Michigan and through Clare. Absolutely.
Boy, is it ever.
And it's really quite amazing. It's worth hearing the entirety of the show because there's more learning about ways of thinking creatively, about structuring a business, marketing a business, and so on. And if you want to talk about resetting, restaging a business, listen to what that business was as it was about to close and what it's become in just a few short years. It's amazing what you can do when you'll set a vision for it and then get completely playful about stepping into creating a new identity for the business and themselves. These guys were cops who have collectively become the business minds that are growing this business. It's really exciting to listen to.
Yeah, it really, really was. Fascinating guys. And,
yeah.
You know, if they had not started out with the idea of making a difference in their community, I don't think they ever would have gotten to the place of coming up with the idea of going after a global audience instead of a local one. It goes right back to that first step of what are your goals in detail and what needs to happen in order to cause those goals, those outcomes to occur.
Exactly. And you and I are sharing these ideas about traffic and conversion and repeat purchases. And in some industries, there are, averages, standards. But the reality is technology is so changing how business gets done nowadays that it's so important to understand sometimes you have to set a goal, implement everything that you think will align with achieving it, measure the results you're getting to find out what your actual statistics look like. It isn't Cinderella's godmother with her magic wand, poof, here's your carriage, you know, your pumpkin into a carriage on wheels with the outriders and they're in their livery and the horses are ready to take you to the ball. Every business has work required with it, and it's only as you yourself start taking actions and measuring the results you're getting that you can start determining cause and effect, and deciding what aspects of the causes are you going to tweak and adjust to see if you get a different effect in your business. The same thing in an offline business, same thing in an online business. I'll go back for a moment to the attorney who I mentioned earlier in the show. She knew that what she wanted to focus on was estate planning. The fact is, she can be out in Los Angeles marketing herself to the swath of people, the, 7 million people in Los Angeles as an estate planning attorney. But what she did was say, how can I create a niche where when people see me and hear me, they go, of course she's who I want to work with. She's got her law practice focused on estate planning. However, the market she takes it to is where she's refining where she's doing her marketing and so on. So she's in her mid-30s. She has two young children. Where is she doing her marketing? She's doing marketing to groups of mothers with young children, professional women who are in gatherings of other professionals where she's a guest speaker, where she's talking about herself, her family, the concerns that should be in the minds of parents of young children and so on, of parents, of adults who not only have young children but also have aging parents and so on. She knows the topics to bring to the table so that that particular niche market says, that's whose office I want to go and sit down and have a conversation about estate planning.
Yeah.
How might that apply in your business? How might that apply in thinking about where to be doing your marketing activity? What are the conversations and topics to be sharing conversationally or in formal presentations, in your blog posts, and so on, so that people who encounter you say, ah, the reason I hadn't taken action yet was because I hadn't heard it shared the way you're sharing it. You understand my concerns. Or you just brought up a concern that I hadn't even realized I really do need to have as my concern. May I have an appointment, please? So, what's another symptom of when it's time to reset?
I'm trying to remember how many of these we've gone through so far.
So let's see. We've done if you don't have enough traffic, if you aren't converting at a particular level, if you aren't getting repeat purchases from your customers. Oh, here's a fabulous one, and, you know, this applies to this attorney, so keeping it in mind. If you're not getting at least 50% of your customers from referrals from other customers, it's really time that you really reassess the plan you have for your business. And, Gina, that's as relevant in an online business as it is in an offline business, isn't it?
My goodness, it's even more relevant in an online business, although most online business owners don't realize it. So in an online business, more often than not, people think that referrals come from the affiliate links. You're going to pay your customer to bring their friend. You know, if done properly, that should be something that never even crosses the customer's mind. Most customers don't even know what an affiliate link is. They're not going to go sign up for an affiliate program so they can make a couple bucks bringing their friend in. What you want to be doing instead is touching the life of your customer at such a deep level that when they talk about themselves, they can't help but bring up your name at the same time.
And, you know, Gina, I think this is the perfect time to ask our guest, Kay Harris, to join us. Because each of these things that we've been talking about is relevant as she and her partner have been rethinking and resetting their business. Kay, are you with us?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes, really clearly. So
we're
going to have a fifth item that we're going to share, but I would really love to have you share with our listeners, oh, a year ago, what was the vision for your business that you and your partner were working on?
Okay, well, a year ago, my partner Dale Smith and I were taking a look at our business, which is Cabins of Birch Hollow, which is a development of 10 premier cabins in southeastern Kentucky near the Red River Gorge. And Dale and I had just gotten together in our 60s. We were both widowed and didn't ever expect to find anyone again. But when I purchased the cabin from him, I found a beautiful cabin and a wonderful man at the same time. That's a story in itself.
That's
but
perfect.
What I found out in getting to know Dale was that he was a fabulous broker who had made a lot of money as a great real estate salesman over the years. But when he developed the cabins in Birch Hollow, the idea was to build these beautiful cabins, bring his investors in, and then resell them. Well, that was about 2008 to 2010, and we all know what happened with the real estate market then, and it was not easy to sell anything, certainly not vacation rental cabins. So what happened was his investors kind of got stuck there waiting for the market to turn. And Dale found himself a successful salesman now becoming a manager of a vacation rental business, which was not where his skill set lay. So in trying to help him get these cabins well booked so that eventually an investor would want to come in and buy them, I stepped in and said, okay, we've got to get more bookings. that's the solution. We need more bookings. We were booking well on the weekends. We weren't booking enough in the week. So I felt like a year ago what I needed to do was to learn how to market better, and that is not my background at all. I'm a statistician and a research person in my career. What I need to do is to learn about marketing so we can get these cabins booked, and that's how we'd reach our goals, and that's how we could both retire and walk away from this in a few years. And what I found out as I started taking classes with Gina, I don't even know how I found Gina. That's a miracle in itself. But as I started to listen to Gina, I found out that social media was not the solution. It was a tool that you could use to reach your goals. But first, you have to really know what your business is about. And Dale and I were kind of seeing this this development as sort of an obstacle to our being able to be free and enjoy retirement, and looking at it through a very narrow telescope. And Gina helped us to see that, well now, wait a minute, is booking going to help you reach your goals? We looked at the numbers, and no, that wasn't going to be how we were going to reach our goals. We could book them every day of the month for a year, and it still wasn't going to bring in the kind of money that we needed. So what we learned along the way was that we were looking at our customers as just people who came in for a 2 or 3 day stay in cabins of Birch Hollow. And that was not going to get us to our goals. It just wasn't enough money in the business. So instead, Gina said, well, what do you really have there? And I said, well, we have 200 acres in a beautiful part of the mountains in eastern Kentucky. And we could open up 75 more lots for people to actually build cabins. And the 10 we have is just the start. And she said, well, who is going to get you to the place that you can actually sell and make the kind of profit you want to make? And along the way, we have learned that we were looking at the wrong customer. It wasn't our two-day vacationers coming to enjoy the beautiful area and to stay in a great cabin. We needed to have a different type of customer, a customer who would eventually become a buyer of a cabin, a buyer of a lot, a buyer of land. And in talking about what's happening in the gorge and the kind of beautiful area it is, it's a very rustic, gorgeous, spectacular nature area, we discovered along the way that to find that ideal customer who was a buyer, we needed to bring in entire groups of people. We had a beautiful setting for people to come to with their groups, not just a small family, but their entire groups, to have their events and to plan their events there, to come back over and over. And eventually, out of this particular market niche, we could find people who could learn that they could buy a cabin, they could buy a lot, they could build their own dream cabin and continue to come back and bring their group again and again and again. So to get to that customer, we had to completely shift. And it took a while for Dale and me to understand this, but we actually went from seeing our cabins as an obstacle to our dreams to seeing them instead as a path to our dreams by changing the whole focus and seeing them as a gold mine.
Kay, I really want to acknowledge what you've been sharing. It's so important for our listeners to understand. You've been talking about changing your own personal identity, changing the identity of the space and the project itself. You've been talking about understanding it from the perspective of what's the right target market for this new vision, and what's the traffic you need to get in order to get a conversion in the terms of the purchase of a plot of land or one of the cabins. So I just really want to acknowledge how you really beautifully shared all those various aspects that we've been talking about.
Okay.
Well, and I think it took a while. Think about the history of Cabins of Birch Hollow at cabinsofbirchhollow.com. If you think about that history, when was that project first started? 2007, 2006?
Yes, 2006. And so, I became involved in 2010. Yeah.
The work that you've done to completely restage this business to something that fulfills your dreams happened in a matter of a couple of months.
Yes,
it's
it did.
It's a blink of an eye compared to how long it took you to get to where you're at today.
That's correct, yes.
It's huge. It's huge because when we were talking earlier about this notion of how abstract ideas actually can stall us out, and the more specific you could get, the faster you can actually
mm-hmm.
see it, taste it, feel it, and align around it. That's exactly what you lived in just a couple of months.
Exactly, exactly. And now it's kind of just gotten us really excited because instead of looking at just the vacationer who would likely never be our buyer, we're now looking at whole large groups and using social media to find and engage them and bring them there. That's a complete paradigm shift for us, is to look at large groups that we can really serve well and meet their needs and give them a wonderful experience and then actually just leverage those groups like crazy to bring them in. That's just really exciting. So something that was not very exciting 6 months ago or even 4 months ago, we're now seeing as an incredible opportunity for us to go after a different customer. And we're still in the learning process of exactly how to engage that customer, but we've identified them now as our potential buyers in that group. And it's exciting to realize you were sitting on such potential and you just didn't know how to look at it. You just didn't step back long enough. You were just trying to figure out how to get more money coming in instead of looking back and seeing what you actually had and just changing your direction as to who you're going to go after to serve and to bring in. So that's just been so exciting for Dale and me. And right now, just learning about joint ventures and all the people that we that are probably looking for what we have, and we didn't realize that we had something that could serve them.
Right, and what's really cool, what's really fantastic about being able to describe on the higher level, which is what's the characteristic of someone who might want to buy property in this kind of setting and have mm-hmm. a vacation home or have a retirement home or whatever those characteristics might be, it allows you to now go for joint venture partnerships and strategic alliances with people who are already serving and in relationship with exactly those people.
Exactly.
So much easier than just doing Facebook.
Right, exactly.
And it changes who you are when you roll out of bed, doesn't it?
It certainly does. It makes it it makes the experience of learning all the social media stuff, which is kind of overwhelming when you haven't even ever signed on to Facebook 6 months ago, and suddenly you're exposed to Google Plus and blogging and all these different aspects that can be overwhelming at first. And actually, you can go from seeing them as a burden to have to learn all this to actually seeing them as fun, that you can take the skill sets you have and find a way. For me, it's writing. I love to write, and I designed a website. I love to learn how to make our website attractive and beautiful. So take what I can do and actually have fun with it.
And it also lets your partner look at what he can do for his side of the marketing and relationship building as well.
Absolutely. Dale is now, instead of feeling like he's burdened by this, he really likes to sell. That's what he likes to do. Instead, he's now going to be at those cabins taking the groups on tours of the gorge. He loves the history of the area. He knows it inside and out. And he's now going to serve the groups here doing what he loves to do. He can sell ice to an Eskimo. So if people come and talk to Dale, they will begin to see what the opportunities are there. So my part of the partnership is to help them to understand how to get them there and how to reach them and show them what's possible and get them to come. And his part will be to serve them once they're there and show them they can enjoy the area, own a cabin, bring in additional groups, and earn a fee doing that. There will be lots of ways our partners can actually make money in the adventure too, and we can all win.
And, you know,
and
Gina, you and I
what
had
you
as
were doing. Sorry,
go ahead. No, go ahead.
What you were doing a year ago was you were going out looking for a customer, trying to convince that one customer to come to the cabins and stay for 2 or 3 days.
Right.
Now you've added maximum leverage because the one person you have to reach, that you have to talk to, is the one that's going to bring 50 people with them to the cabin.
Exactly.
And by going after the right one person, it's going to bring in these 50 people who first come for the event, who then want to come back a second, a third, a fourth time even, just to experience the beauty with their family for a true vacation. That is huge, huge amounts of leverage. And at the same time, the right 50 people are the people who are going to want to not just come back over and over again, but invest in it so that they either have a vacation property they can go to whenever they want, or they've got a vacation property that's part of this pool that you get to make money again by renting out.
Absolutely.
That little piece is so hugely different in how you spend your time, and that brings us to the fifth piece of, if you're working more than 40 hours a week and can't see a way to reduce your time, you probably need to relook at what you're doing. Because I see this for you guys as a way for you to really get your time back, to reach one person, and at the same time, it's getting you 50 people, hugely different than to have to go talk to all 50 yourself.
Right. Well, but we saw this as a business. We just wanted to make profitable enough that some investor somewhere would buy the business and everything. And now we see it as such a lucrative opportunity in just a few years. And our timeline's shorter than most, I guess, since we're at retirement age. But in just a few years, we could have something too wonderful to sell. People may have to come and convince us to sell it. We could pass this on to our children. Or just enjoy it, you know, for the rest of our lives.
That's a huge difference.
Huge difference
in feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead, Linda.
You put your finger on the very thing that I want to be sure our listeners understand, which is this idea of leverage. Each of the things that we've talked about today is all these various ways of rethinking about business and life, restaging. I'm restaging my house and my life, which of course is going to bleed over, or shall I say, influence how I think about my business. And the same for people who are sitting, staring at their business going, just doesn't feel like it ought to be this hard. It ought to be easier. You're absolutely right. What are the various leverage points that can make it all easier? So what is it that you can change in how you're getting traffic to your business that create that leverage? Kay's example of, instead of needing to try and find one buyer at a time, to rather be creating experiences for 50 at a time, completely changes her experience of her life, her business, and the results she's going to be able to get in the business in terms of traffic, in terms of conversion, in terms of repeat experience, and so on. And so we're inviting you, as you listen to the show, to go back and listen to this discussion again and again and think about where are the leverage points in your business that it's time to restage, rethink, realign from your goals through your execution that will help you build a really lucrative business in this year and coming years.
And, you know, you were talking earlier about the restaging your house and clearing out the clutter. As you're rethinking your business, don't be afraid and don't hesitate to clear out the clutter. Recently at Directions U, looking at the business in the way that we're talking about right now, we realized we have these 5 low-end products that, okay, when we sell them, we make a little bit of money. But they don't do a great job of getting someone to buy a second, a third, a fourth time, or getting people to buy the thing we really want to sell, which is the Directions U Bachelor's Program. So we've made a decision that in the next 30 days, those five products are going bye-bye. You will not be able to buy any of them as a standalone product anymore. The content is still there. It's still very valuable. So we're going to package them together with different products that really do a great job of getting people to buy again and again and again and getting them to bring all their friends in as well. And it will feel very different on the site when a visitor is looking at it and experiencing it. But, oh, my goodness, you talk about huge amounts of leverage. We're not losing the couple bucks we make on each of those sales. We gain the ability to have customers come in and do business with us for life by giving up a couple bucks up front.
Exactly. And let's extend it to the other businesses we've been talking about today. So Cops and Donuts, they have a specialty item they create right around Christmas and the New Year, and all their customers know it's only available for that six-week span. They have devoted followers waiting for when they can order it annually, to order for themselves, to order for gift giving, and so on. It's part of what attaches their customers in loyalty across the years. They had to make a decision about what products are we making day in and day out, and which products are we not making day in and day out, but we're reserving for specific occasions. That's how they're creating one form of leverage for themselves. The estate planning attorney, it's extremely natural for estate planning attorneys to work on trusts, to work on probate when someone has passed, to manage those affairs. The attorney that I've been speaking to has made a decision. She does not want a large part of her practice to be managing probate. Guess what? She now gets to create strategic alliances with attorneys who love and want to do probate, and they cross-refer to each other, each of them creating leverage in their business, and each of them shedding that part that they don't want to be devoting time and attention to. How might it be equally relevant for you in your business?
It's a great question to ask.
Yeah.
So
Gina and I invite you.
What advice do you have for our listeners, Kay?
I would say be willing to change your perspective. Be willing to stand back and reevaluate what you consider to be problems, and to instead to see if your solution is maybe lying there in what you already have. I guess that's what I would leave from them, is change your perspective and be willing to look at it differently and find out who you really need to be your customer and how to go find them.
Great advice. Go ahead, Linda.
I was going to say, Gina and I invite all of you to sit back, rethink what is your vision for your life and your business, and what are the goals that are going to help you get there, and how might you, in fact, restage what's going on in your business? Obviously, Gina and I are delighted to help if you would like our mind assisting you with it. Whoever you want to work with, get outside of your comfortable space of just having the conversation with yourself to where you can use other people as a sounding board, just as you've heard Kay did with Gina and so on. And it's been a delight to be able to bring this topic to you this week, and I invite you to join us again on next week's show, because the reason we do Breakthrough Directions is specifically to enable you to have the chance to think freshly about your business and look for ways to restage your business and your life. And it's been delightful sharing it with you today, and I look forward to sharing it with you on next week's Breakthrough Directions show.
And thanks so much for being here today, Kay. Thanks,
oh,
Linda.
You're welcome.
And we'll see you guys all next week. Have a fantastic week, everybody.
Take care.
Join us Tuesday at noon Eastern for the next episode of Breakthrough Directions, from relationship marketing to business success.